Devono continue to pay for an act to amend the Crimes Act 2011 and the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act 2011. The Honourable the Minister of Education, Telecommunications and Justice.
And have the honour to move the bill for an act to amend the Crimes Act 2011 and the Criminal Procedure Evidence Act 2011 be read for the first time.
I now put the question, which is that a bill for an act to amend the Crimes Act 2011 and the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act 2011 be read the first time. Those in favour? Those against? Carried.
The Criminal Justice Amendment Act 2013.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to move that the bill be now read a second time. This is a bill which amends the Crimes Act 2011 and the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act 2011. In particular, the bill amends Part 6, 7, and 13 of the Crimes Act 2011 and Part 2 and 29 of the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act 2011. You see, this bill allows the government to fulfill two manifesto commitments. We have a commitment to introduce protection from harassment provisions. Part 6 of the Crimes Act already contains some provisions for the protection from harassment. We are expanding these provisions to put the Bhopal legislation on a par with the UK on harassment. We are also creating new specific offences for stalking and stalking involving fear of violence or alarm or fear of alarm or distress. Mr. Speaker, we also have a manifesto commitment to criminalise hate crimes. There are also presently offences in Part 7 of the Crimes Act dealing with religious or racial hatred. These are expanded upon in this bill and include other forms of recognised hatred, namely hatred on the grounds of sexual orientation, disability and age. The bill also introduces offences of harassment which are aggravated by one of the forms of recognised hatred as set out above. Furthermore, Mr. Speaker, the government has taken the opportunity of this bill to introduce other amendments which we consider necessary to the Crimes Act and the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act. Amendments to Part 13 of the Crimes Act are made, and these are the provisions which created the Sex Offenders Register. And these are included as a response to UK case law in this area. These amendments provide for the possibility of a review when someone is included in the register on an indefinite basis. And finally, Mr. Speaker, there are also amendments to Part 2 and 29 of the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act. The amendment to Part 2 is a response to operational issues that the Royal Geographic Police have faced whilst investigating certain offences, whereas the amendments to Part 29 relate to the way in which amendments to the Code of Practice under that Act may be made. I will take these amendments in turn as they appear in the bill, starting with the Crimes Act 2011 and Part 6. So, see, the Part 6 of the Crimes Act 2011 currently contains offences which provide for the protection of persons from harassment. The amendment in Clause 2 introduced the new stalking offences which I have already mentioned, and also bring our legislation in this area closer to that which currently exists in the UK. The amendments include changes to the way a course of conduct is defined. At present, a course of conduct requires harassment of the same person on at least two occasions. We are now also making provision for situations where a course of harassment is aimed at more than one person, but each person is harassed once. A specific offence dealing with this is also included. This was introduced, Mr. Speaker, in the UK to deal with offenders who have a certain group of persons due to their belief or employment. For example, animal rights activists or extremists harassing laboratory employees or anti-hunting groups targeting participants in legal hunts. Even though these particular circumstances, those specific circumstances, do not arise in Gibraltar, there are other circumstances where it could actually apply. For example, the harassment of employees or a particular company, or the government agency, or department, or the targeting of a particular family, where two or more members of the family are individually subject to conduct which amounts to harassment. speak of a new offence of stalking, and stalking involving fear of violence or serious alarm or distress will be sections 92A and 94A of the Crimes Act. These mirror the offences in this area which were brought into force in England and Wales on the 25th November 2012, which was after the Crimes Act and the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act were passed by the European Parliament. And those provisions in the UK were actually based on a 2010 Act of the Scottish Parliament. A course of conduct under the new provisions amounts to stalking, if it amounts to harassment. The actual omissions involved are ones associated with stalking, and the person knows or ought to know that the course of conduct amounts to harassment of the other person. A non-exhaustive list of examples of behaviour that are associated with stalking is included, such as following a person, or watching or spying on a person's activity. A person would be guilty of the aggravated form, the aggravated version of the offence, where that person pursues a course of conduct amounting to stalking, which he causes another to fear, on at least two occasions, that violence will be used against them, or it causes the victim serious alarm or distress, that has a substantial adverse effect on their usual day-to-day activity, and the person knows or ought to know that his course of conduct will have such an effect on the victim. The Honourable Member of the Office of Figueres has raised with me a drafting issue in relation to these particular matters concerning stalking, and understand that I have himself and myself have proposed an amendment to cure a drafting defect in the deliberative review with that in committee. The Speaker, to support the policing of these new offences, a new power of entry is introduced in respect to the offence of stalking. The new power of entry is exercisable by warrant to allow the police to enter and search premises if there are reasonable grounds for believing that such an offence has been or is being committed and certain other conditions are met. Furthermore, provision is made so that an officer may seize and retain anything for which the search has been authorised. These new provisions are designed to address specific stalking behaviour, as opposed to the general form of harassment which will continue to fall within the current offence of harassment. Mr. Speaker, amendments to other sections within Part 6 are also included within Clause 2 of the bill, and new sections are introduced. These include making provision so that a person may, in certain circumstances, directly apply to the Supreme Court for an injunction restraining another person from committing acts which would amount to harassment. There is already a power in the Crimes Act for an injunction to be sought to prevent harassment. However, the new power is related to and follows the introduction of the new offence in Section 91(1)(a) of harassment involving two or more persons. In addition, we are making provision allowing for the imposition of restraining orders on officials, thus increasing the remedy available to persons suffering from harassment. There may be circumstances where someone is acquitted of a criminal offence, but the court may consider that it is appropriate for a restraining order to be made to protect a person from harassment. And a question may arise, Mr. Speaker, as to how can a restraining order be made to restrain harassment where someone is actually acquitted of the offence of harassment? Now, I will say this, Mr. Speaker. These will be matters for the court to consider, and I do not intend by this speech to place any limitations on the issues which the court might itself consider. There is, in fact, already case law in England, which sets out some judicial guidance specifically on restraining orders following acquittal on an offence on a charge of harassment. But I will also point these matters out, Mr. Speaker. A restraining order under this section would be a civil remedy, and therefore different standards of proof would apply. Secondly, whereas the criminal trial looks at past events, where a harassment has actually occurred in the past, the court considering a restraining order will look at future risk and can take into account evidence which is not actually given during the criminal trial itself. And in this regard, Mr. Speaker, I would also quote from legal guidance prepared by the Crown Prosecution Service in the UK in relation to Section 5A of the UK Protection from Harassment Act, and that is the equivalent provision in England, and which is published on the website. And I quote, Section 5A was introduced to deal with those cases where there is clear evidence that the victim needs protection, but there is insufficient evidence to convict on the particular charges before the court. It is still open to the victim to seek a non-molestation as not only avoiding delay and increased cost to the legal aid budget, they could also be without the question having to be on legal aid, but also providing a more seamless process of providing protection to victims. To speak of an addition, the bill creates a new offence of harassment of a person in his or her home. The purpose of this offence is to give the police the ability to deal with harassing or intimidating behaviour by individuals towards a person in his home. It is a necessary ingredient of the offence that the person intends his presence to amount to harassment of, or to cause alarm or distress to, the resident, or that the person knows or also knows that his presence is likely to result in the harassment of, or to cause alarm or distress to the resident. It is also necessary for the person to be present there for the purpose of representing to or persuading the resident or another individual that he should not do something that he is entitled or required to do, or that he should do something that he is not under an obligation to do. To speak, I turn to the amendment to Part 7 of the Crimes Act. Part 7 presently contains offences dealing with religious and racial hatred. Clause 3 of the bill makes provision for the implementation of our manifesto commitment on the criminalisation of hate crimes. The following provisions are included in Clause 3 of the bill. 1. The hatred-based offences in the Crimes Act, which currently apply only to stirring up of hate, racial or religious hatred, are extended to include the stirring up of hatred on the grounds of sexual orientation. 2. The saving for freedom of expression is extended to apply to discussion or criticism of accepted behavior or practices, or the urging of persons to refrain from such conduct or practices. This means that freedom of expression is safeguarded, and that nothing in Part 7 of the Crimes Act prohibits discussion or criticism of sexual conduct or practices, or the urging of persons to refrain from such conduct or practices. 3. The current law in the Crimes Act on aggravated offences, which currently applies only to racially aggravated offences, is similarly extended to cover other types of aggravated offences and aggravated harassment, namely offences which are religiously aggravated, disability aggravated, aggravated by reason of sexual orientation, and age aggravation. And 4. A new section 117A is introduced to provide for the increasing sentences for racial, religious, disability, or age aggravation and aggravation related to sexual orientation for offences which do not specifically include an element of that aggravation. And in summary, Mr. Speaker, what Clause 3 of this bill does is to provide a uniform application of hate crime, of the law on hate crime, by extending the offences of stirring up hatred to include sexual orientation, by extending the aggravated offences to religion, sexual orientation, age, and disability, and by introducing new provisions which allow for increasing sentences where an offence is aggravated by reason of race, religion, sexual orientation, age, or disability. I should perhaps, Mr. Speaker, explain the difference between the aggravated offences and the possibility of an increase in sentences as a result of an aggravating factor. A person may, Mr. Speaker, for example, be charged with a basic offence of assault, or with a separate and distinct and more serious offence of racially aggravated assault. Where a court is dealing with the basic offence of assault, but the offence is in fact racially aggravated, the court must treat that as an aggravating factor when it considers the sentence which ought to be imposed. In most cases, Mr. Speaker, where that kind of aggravation is evident from the outset, the defendant will be charged with a more serious aggravated offence. But there may be cases where the aggravation only becomes evident during the trial itself for the lesser offence. And in those cases, it is right that the court should treat that as an aggravating factor and sentence accordingly. Part 13 of the Crimes Act. You see, the Part 13 contains what is commonly known as the Sex Offenders Register, and also contains other measures which can be deployed in dealing with sex offenders. This bill contains in Clause 4 amendments to Part 13 to remedy an incompatibility with Article 8, which is respect for private and family rights, of the European Convention on Human Rights. In accordance with Section 307 of the Crimes Act, a sex offender who is sentenced to imprisonment for a term of 30 months or more will be subject to notification requirements in other words, inclusion in the sex offenders register for life. The current law is that those sex offenders have no possibility of reviewing those requirements. On the 21st of April 2010, the Supreme Court in the United Kingdom declared in R on the application of F and Angus Aubrey Thompson versus Secretary of State for the Home Department that the provision in the UK Sexual Offences Act 2003, which are the equivalent of a Crimes Act for these purposes, about indefinite notification requirements for sex offenders without the right to have them reviewed, is incompatible with Article 8 of the European Convention of Human Rights. On 30th of April 2012, the UK Sexual Offences Act 2003 was amended by the UK Sexual Offences Act 2003 Remedial Order 2012 to introduce a mechanism which will enable registered sex offenders who are subject to notification requirements for life to apply for those requirements to be reviewed. The amendment contained in this bill, in Part 13 of the Crimes Act, in essence mirror the contents of that remedial order and are intended to ensure that the notification regime under the Crimes Act is no longer incompatible with the Convention rights. The one difference between the UK provisions and our provisions will be that whereas in the UK applications for review are made to the police, in Gibraltar such applications will be made to the Magistrates Court. The new Section 315D will provide an extensive list of factors which must be taken into account by the court in determining such an application for review. These include the risk of sexual harm posed by the offender, the seriousness of the offence for which he was convicted, the period of time elapsed since the offence or other offences committed, and, importantly, any sufficient evidence from a victim of the offence to which the indefinite notification relates. In the light of this, Mr. Speaker, and other provisions in the Crimes Act relating to sexual offenders, we are satisfied that this amendment in no way affects the effectiveness and the powers in dealing properly and adequately with sexual offenders. I turn, Mr. Speaker, to the amendment to the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act 2011. Mr. Speaker, Part 2 of the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act sets out the provisions in relation to the power to stop and search or enter and search. Section 12, which is contained in Part 2, limits the making of an application for a search warrant to investigations into indictable offences. This bill amends that requirement, as provided for in Clause 5, to allow for such warrants to be also sought in relation to a list of summary offences which are included in a new Schedule 14 to the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act 2011. The requirement for this amendment was brought to my attention by the Royal Gibraltar Police, who highlighted difficulties in investigating certain serious but summary-only offences, such as wasteful employment of police, harassment, improper use of an electronic network, and dealing with offensive weapons. Under the legislation in effect pre the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act, a search warrant could be sought for any offence. We are not proposing to go back to that system. What we are proposing is a system of scheduling certain offences due to one, their relative seriousness, and two, the possible difficulty in investigating them without search warrants. In the list in the proposed Schedule 14 contains such offences. I will also say in relation to this particular schedule, Mr. Speaker, and just following the conversation that I had with the Honourable Member Mr. Figueroa on this particular part yesterday, about the possibility of a power to add to the list of offences. And it was certainly government's intention that a power should be included so that whenever a new offence is brought to our attention as requiring a search warrant, by order in the Gazette, for example, the list can be amended. I have looked again at the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act and confirmed that there is already that power. Section 698 of the amend any schedule by notice of the, in the Gazette. What I couldn't do, certainly under that power, was introduce a new schedule. And therefore, by this bill, we're introducing the new schedule with a list, as they have been requested of us in the first instance, and should the occasion arise to add to that list, that additions have been made by notice in the Gazette. Mr. Speaker, Part 29 of the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act relates to the publication of the Code of Practice under that Act. A change proposed under the bill introduces a simplified procedure where what has been done is that a code is being revised or amended rather than the issue of a new code. There is still, however, a requirement for the revised or amended code to be laid before Parliament where there will be an opportunity to pass a motion to disapprove of the revision or amendment. And if so disapproved, the Minister must revoke the amendment or revision and in effect reintroduce the code as it was in effect immediately before the changes. The Speaker, the Government considers that there may be circumstances where a code may need to be amended without having to go in advance through the procedure currently set out in the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act, which requires the publication of the amended or revised code in draft, giving time for representation to be made and consideration of those representations, the tabling of that code in Parliament, and then waiting 30 days after the next sitting of Parliament before the amended or revised code has effect. That is a procedure which could take 2 months or more. The code contains procedures, Mr. Speaker, which relate to rights of suspects or detainees. And there may be, for example, a need to respond to a case concerning compatibility or incompatibility of a particular part of the code with the European Convention of Human Rights. In those circumstances, a power could exist to amend the code immediately and the matter brought to Parliament thereafter. In that way, there would be no continued breach of the Convention. And another concrete example I would give on the possible use of this power is in relation to the solicitor scheme. A draft of the code, which is currently in place, contains provisions for the introduction of such a scheme. These were removed given the very limited take-up there was by lawyers at the time wishing to participate in that scheme. And for that reason, Section 85 of the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act was not commenced. The government expects that this session will be commenced in due course, and it will be then necessary to reintroduce those provisions of the code which were removed. And it should not, however, be necessary to deal with this as if a totally new code was being introduced. And the amendment to Part 29 will allow the government to make such a change without starting the whole procedure afresh. I would also add, in relation to this, that this amendment is not intended to give the government, or me as Minister for Justice, the power to make wholesale changes or wholesale revisions, even though the power does that. It is intended for very specific circumstances which may arise and which may require a code to be amended straight away. The current procedure doesn't have a saving for urgencies. It just doesn't have that provision at all, and therefore there is a possibility of having to wait a couple of months. But to the extent possible, whenever any amendment or revision is going to be made, it would be my intention to publish the closing draft and allow representation to be made. So to the extent that we can follow the procedure for the new code, even in relation to amendment or revision, that will be done. But where it is necessary for the emergency, it is, in our view, important that that power should exist. In any event, even if the power is used, it is always open for Parliament to pass a motion disapproving of what has been done. And that would happen immediately at the next sitting after the power has been used. So Parliament still has a supervisory role to take, and if it's approved by Parliament, as I have already mentioned, the new code, or rather the code as originally existed, would have to be reintroduced by the Minister. So there is a safeguard there for Parliament in any event. Mr. Speaker, this bill gives effect to manifesto commitments of the government, as well as introducing provisions which we consider necessary or appropriate. In complex legislation, such as the Crimes Act and the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act, there will always be issues which arise post-commencement and which require correction. fifth-day Hasidia. As such, we consider the passing of the day will result in an improvement to our criminal justice system. We speak by commendable for that.
Before I put the question, does anyone remember which is the general principles and merit for the bill?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I'm grateful to the Honourable Mr. Justice for implementing this suspense and for dealing with a variety of issues that we have had occasion to discuss just over the last 24 hours or so. I'm grateful to him for making himself available for this meeting because it will make this process far simpler and far more collegial than it might otherwise have been, for that I am grateful. In relation, Mr. Speaker, and I will go briefly through the various parts and amendments proposed in the bill. In relation to the two stalking offences and the introduction of search warrants in the context of stalking, this side of the House certainly considers that it is right and proper that this should be the case and that it should be brought in line with the position in the UK, building on the introduction of the harassment offences and the crimes act introduced by my learned and honourable leader, Daniel Susan. I am pleased to note from the statistics in the Gibraltar Authority report that since the introduction of those offences, only one report has been made. But certainly, it is not happy to be complacent and indignant at this issue, and being ahead of the fold is certainly, in my view, a worthy pursuit. In relation to the injunctions and other amendments we passed, including in particular the restraining orders which will be imposed upon individuals following acquittal, again, this has the full support of this side of the House. And while that's something that was discussed between myself and the Honourable Minister during our conversations on this day, the issue of harassment at home is one that has been an issue more in the UK than it has been here, but once more, we certainly consider it on this side of the House as important to keep ourselves up to date in respect of these particular offences, whether or not it is a challenge which is in the community currently. In respect of the amendment to Part 7 and the introduction of the raft of offences and enhancements in respect of offences of sexual orientation, sexual orientation, age and disability, again, this side of the House will possibly support that initiative. And moving on to the amendment to Part 13 of the Crimes Act, which deals with the incompatibility between the convention rights and the indefinite notification requirements. Certainly, it is the case that this has been dealt with in the UK as well, and we have no issue that the evidence is pursuing that. Further, in relation to Section 12 and the creation of Schedule 14, it is in fact the case, as the Honourable Minister alluded to earlier, that we have had a conversation in this particular regard, and I was certainly perfectly keen for the additional power, had it been necessary, to be added to this bill by way of amendment, and I am grateful to the Minister for confirming that is not necessary. I turn now, Mr. Speaker, to perhaps the only significant point of contention that has arisen during the review of this bill, and that is the amendment to Section 690 of the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act. Mr. Speaker, for the members on this side of the House, the general principle which is brought into effect by this amendment, that the Honourable Minister is able to amend by order the whole of the code, which originally are required by law to pass the draft and procedure and then through this panel, caused perhaps the confirmation is too strong a word, but it caused us a moment's concern in the context of what the application of that power would mean in the current Gibraltar context. We are satisfied, certainly I personally am, and this is the view on the side of the House with the assurance given by the Honourable Minister in respect to the application of this power is sufficient to allay any fears that we may have in respect of the abuse of the power, that we will be supporting the bill in its entirety, despite some reservations that we may have. Again, I would like to echo the Minister's comments in respect to the teething problems that are to be expected and entirely natural in the context of legislation of significant issues, and this therefore has no issues in supporting this bill.
Mr. Speaker, I'm grateful to the Honourable Gentleman for recognising that one is dealing with a seminar, indeed, two seminar pieces of legislation, as the Crimes Act and also the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act clearly are the two largest acts in legal history in Gibraltar, dealing with crimes and also evidence and procedure from top to bottom in what is our criminal law, that it's always going to be an evolving process for any subsequent government coming back to it and needing to amend in order to effectively keep that act up to date or deal with any problems in the implementation of the act. Indeed, you may recall that when we have our exchanges in relation to the sexual offences amendment to the sexual offences part and the sexual offences register in March of this year, I think it was March of this year, I also alerted him to the fact that I was aware of certain European Court of Human Rights decisions that may well necessitate amendment to this act, which is one of the reasons why we have to bring amendments today. But I'd like to talk about the question of the amendment to the Code of Conduct. I don't know whether the idea to amend the way that Code of Conduct are revised was taken from a previous draft, a draft of the bill, or whether it's been an initiative from his department. But let me tell him that my recollection is that in fact, in one of the late drafts of this particular bill, we had actually done exactly what the Honourable Gentleman has done today in his amendment. When I had my bilateral meeting with the backbencher then, the Chief Minister, his view carried a lot of force, was, well, hang on a minute, what you're effectively doing, or what can arise as a consequence of the regime as drafted, is that you could amend the entirety of the draft. We have actually gone through the original safeguards and the original procedure. And even if you don't amend the entirety of the draft, you could amend substantial part of it, and by substantial part of it, that really are so substantial that you ought to go through the original procedure, because the original procedure is there intended to provide the public and stakeholders with a safeguard that there's going to be some proper input from stakeholders and some proper speaking in relation to amendments to the code. I have to say that although my preference is that the act should not have been amended, and that the procedure should have stayed the same as we had originally adopted, I recognise that it was in the cards for us. I recognise that there are two views in relation to this, and that, of course, if at the end of the day it arises in the future, or a situation arises in the future, whereby a government seeks to abuse this particular power by introducing, for example, very substantial amendments to the code, or revise the entirety of the code without going through the original procedure and sort of way of circumventing it, that obviously would create a political problem and to create a political debate, which we no doubt would raise or some future opposition may raise in this House and outside it. And for that reason, we don't believe that despite the fact that we would have taken and did take a different policy decision in relation to this, that it is a good enough reason for us either to abstain or to vote against this bill.
this is what I ask the Honourable Member for the Press. The Honourable Minister for Justice.
Speaker, thank you. The comments from the members of the office are very helpful indeed. And not just the comments, as Mr. Figueroa says, strengthened. There have been several conversations between myself and him outside of the chamber on this particular bill, which has been very useful in focusing on particular areas. And in fact, he mentioned in identifying one particular matter which actually requires amendments because there was a drafting issue. The Honourable Leader of the Opposition asked whether the amendment we are making in relation to the introduction or the amendment or revision of a code, whether it results of a previous version of the bill. I was not aware, in fact, that there had been a previous version of the bill where this had been considered. But I can tell him how it actually arose. And it arose out of consideration of the introduction at some point of the commencement of Section 85 of the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act, which is what provides for the right to legal advice and therefore the introduction of the duty solicitor scheme. And it occurred to me that that is something I can do. I can commence Section 85 of the Criminal Procedure by noting in the Gazette. But I can't give it effect because I couldn't amend the code, the corresponding amendments to the code, which have to be made. We'd have to go through a whole procedure of publishing the code and draft, hearing representations, considering representations, tabling before Parliament, and then waiting 30 days after the next sitting. So there is something strange in that a minister can commence primary legislation, but not a code of practice, which is designed to give that effect. And therefore, I thought that in those circumstances, that power would exist. And it also occurs to me, when looking at this, particularly given the amendment we're introducing in relation to the Second Assembly Register, because of the incompatibility with the European Convention of Human Rights. In that particular case, it has not been a practical problem to wait to cure that incompatibility, because we only commenced the Second Assembly Register last year, and realistically and practically, the time for review of anybody who is there on an indefinite basis certainly didn't have a reason. So whatever incompatibility exists can be amended through this normal course of events by waiting, and as the Honourable Member has mentioned earlier this year, the fact that this amendment was required was mentioned in the Parliament, and in practice, it hasn't resulted in any problem. But it did occur to us that a question of incompatibility might arise in relation to existing rights of people who have been dealt with by the police. And you could have a situation where there is some sort of declaration of incompatibility somewhere else, the Supreme Court in the United Kingdom, for example, or the European Convention, or the European Court on Human Rights. And we would have a procedure to implement that straight away, which raises a practical problem. How do the police deal with a code of practice which is actually stated to be incompatible with the convention rights? And during those 2 months that it takes, or 6 weeks, or whatever, however long it takes, how do the police deal with those aspects of those basic detainees? And therefore, there is a possibility of a practical problem and the need to act with haste in those circumstances. But I can say, as I have already said, that it is envisaged that this power would only be used in very rare and extreme circumstances. And to the extent possible, it will be published in draft, any amendment, any revision, and certainly no wholesale revision. Certainly no wholesale revision is planned for the moment, but if it were, it certainly would go through the normal procedure of publishing the draft and considering representations. Finally, Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Member has mentioned that we have to recognise that these are seminal pieces of legislation that introduced a essentially a new criminal justice framework, particularly following what in England had been introduced as the procedure side in particular. That was some of the revolutionary figures. And these are very substantial pieces of legislation. They were passed I was born in June 2011 and commenced towards the end of last year. In that over 1 year, we've had occasion to come back to Parliament on this occasion and on a previous occasion to make an amendment which we wanted to make. Keating's problems have not been that great, and perhaps it is a testament to the care that was taken with those two very important pieces of legislation at the time and how they were introduced, that we haven't actually had too many problems in practice, or not too many issues have arisen which have been brought to our attention which required some sort of revision or amendment to the Act. And therefore, I just want to place on record that these were important and complex pieces of legislation, and the fact that over the past year or so that they have been in place, only minor issues have come to light, I think shows that, as the Honourable Member has mentioned, quite a number of drafts that have gone through, 11 drafts, I understand, in order to arrive at what is quite clear, two very important pieces of legislation. And I am very grateful for the Honourable Member signifying that he will support the amendment in the bill, which, as I have indicated, I expect to serve as improving even further the criminal justice structure that we have in the world.
I now put the question, which is that a bill for an act to amend the Crimes Act 2011 and the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act 2011 be read a second time. Those in favour? Those against? Carried.
Criminal Justice Amendment Act 2013.
I beg to give notice that the committee state on third reading of the bill be taken today and all honourable members agree.
All honourable members agree that the committee state on third reading of the bill be taken today, which is not. May I ask the Leader of the House, therefore, to ask that the House resolve itself into committee.
This is to have the honour to move that the House should resolve itself into committee to consider the following bill called by clause, namely the Criminal Justice Amendment Bill 2013.
A bill for an act to amend the Crimes Act 2011 and the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act 2011. Clause 1,
first part of the bill. Clause 2, second part of the bill.
Mr. Chairman, Clause 2. Clause 13, where it says after section 94 is set, there is a heading stalking involving fear of violence, and then there is section 94A. I would propose the remainder, where it says is guilty of an offence, those words should be at the end of 94A1, so that as a separate paragraph, so that it reads 94A1, a person A whose conduct, course of conduct, A amounts to stalking, and B, either A knows or ought to know that A's course of conduct will cause B to have to fear on each of those occasions, or, as the case may be, will cause such alarm or distress, is guilty of an offence. Is guilty of an offence is a separate line after B.
Does the clerk have a copy of the amendment in writing?
Therefore, what we move the amendment is saying that 94A1 to read as follows. 94A1, a person A whose course of conduct A amounts to stalking, and B either A knows or ought to know that A's course of conduct will cause B to interfere on each of those occasions, or as occasionally will cause such alarm or distress, is guilty of an offence. Is that a clear amendment? And is there a comma after distress? And then we always remove the full stop.
The full stop after the stress will be removed, and then it's going to be an offence in the new language with a full stop after the offence. And a comma after the stress.
Then we'll now put that amendment to the vote. Those in favour? Those against? Carried. Thought to as amended.
Just to clarify.
That is thank you.
Close to as amended, stand part of the day.
Clause 3,
stand part of the bill.
Clause 4,
stand part of the bill.
Clause 5,
stand part of the bill.
The wrong country,
stand part of the bill.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to report that the Criminal Justice Amendment Bill 2015 has been considered in committee and agreed to with amendments, and I now move that they be read, that it be read a third time and passed.
I now put the question: is that a bill for an act to amend the Crimes Act 2011? And the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act 2011, as amended, be read a third time. Those in favour? Aye. Those against? Carried.
Honourable
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to move that the House be now adjourned to an ADA.
And I propose that the House will now adjourn to ED. I will now put the question of the chair of the House, which now adjourns immediately. Those in favour? House again? Carried. The House will now adjourn immediately.